It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Right, welcome back to another episode of Political Football. Just when you thought we were down and out for the rest of the year, we come back and hit you with a Christmas special. And I'm joined here by no less than my co-host, Joe Boyden. How are you this morning, mate?
Good, mate. As the intro said, it certainly is the most wonderful time of the year. Silly season has struck, but it's great to be back on air, mate, to wrap the year up. We've got a big episode planned just to go back over our big year and give you guys an insight on what's to come in the next year.
It certainly is silly season from the Canberra bubble. With our ScoMo, Christian Porter up there, down there creating some IR drama, some industrial relations drama. Just when they're sailing along beautifully, they have to bring up something that isn't particularly their strong suit. So a bit of an early Christmas present for someone like myself.
That's it.
And then in the sporting world, the merry-go-round continues to go round in the NRL transfer market. Big joy off Ngawi coming aboard to the Tigers, Jimmy the Jet.
Poor fellow.
So it's good to see some machinations. Jimmy Tamiya coming, reporting for duties 3 weeks early. So a bit of Christmas cheer for the Tigers fans. How about for Para? Just before, I know we're getting to sport a bit later on, but just on Para, your recruitment in the off-season, your thoughts on that?
Not the most exciting and brain-busting that I've seen in past years, but I still think there's more to come coming into the new year. I mean, I'm not too mind-blown on what we've got so far, but there is a long way to go, and we did let go of a lot of players, so we have a lot of room. So I think there's something plotting there down in out in Para. So
yep.
I'm looking forward to seeing.
We'll see what machinations take place there, but that's neither here nor there for the present moment. It's certainly bringing a sort of a close to 2020. It's been one hell of a year, a once in a 100-year pandemic, rugby league coming back as one of the first foremost sports on the international calendar, amongst a variety of other machinations that took place. And I don't know how many times I said machinations in the first 2 minutes of this podcast, but it must be a record. But
more times than I've ever heard that word.
What we're trying to get at here is that we're going to go through the best and worst of 2020, obviously in the policy framework and in the sporting world. So we're going to start off now with the best and worst policies of 2020. Now, I always like to look on the bright side of life first, so we'll start with the contenders for the best. And Joe, do you want to run us through the ones we've got listed there?
So the top two contenders we've got are the New South Wales hotel quarantine policy as the international gateway to the world. The state government getting this right was a vital cog to the overall success of containing international arrivals. The second was the coronavirus supplement to the JobKeeper payment. While being reduced significantly over the last few months, the six-month period it effectively doubled, provided the cushion for those hit hard by the pandemic, reminding us unemployment isn't a choice, which was actually huge for a lot of people. I know it impacted myself as well, which I had to get around this too. So a lot of people listening, I'm sure, would feel closely with this policy. So,
and if you had to pick one, for the golden gong, the year, obviously the one's looking at the economic ramifications, the other one's looking at containing the health outcomes of the coronavirus. If you had a gun to your head, which one would you be rolling to in terms of the best policy?
Just because it most closely affected me, the coronavirus supplement and JobSeeker, and JobKeeper, benefits, but just because that most closely hit me because I needed that at a certain point, which was huge. I guess the New South Wales hotel quarantine, that affected me in the long run too, I guess, because it kind of helped stop breakouts and helped stop the spread, which impacted me as well, whether it's closely or not. But I have to go with the supplement. Huge. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what I would have done in that couple-month period where I didn't have work on. I was out of Sydney, you know, I would have been staffed on.
Up shit creek, as they say.
That's it, mate.
I'd probably go with the job seeker supplement as well, just because of the sort of mentality shift that it sort of showed. Like, you have these politicians for years saying, "Oh, you know, I could manage on $40 a day," when they're earning $180,000. So again, you know how much I dislike hypocrisy, and that wasn't as pure as form. And it goes to show that this actually drags a lot of people out of poverty. Poverty is a bit like, it's like half the average minimum wage. So the relative poverty that people were dragged out, it actually shows that unemployment isn't a choice. You know, most people would, you know, probably 99% of people on the unemployment benefit would have a job if they could have a job. And obviously, you're in a better financial position if you do have a job. So I think it changed that mentality around that. And, you know, rather than sort of them having to choose between a meal for themselves or a meal for their kids or whatever the trade-off would be, you know, the sacrifice they have to go through. I think a lot of people were in this position for the first time. And I feel like that empathy, you know, empathy is a wonderful thing. And for the government to recognise that, it would be nice now. They started to scale it down now. I think it's going to like $715 in the new year, so it's getting back towards where it was below before. It would be nice to see an increase in that base. So we said in previous episodes, Grant Institute recommends at least $100 a week increase to the base. So that'd be, was it $565 before? They would take it to at least $765. I'd like to see it kept at its current level of $824. I just think that is probably the bare minimum you could live on for 2 weeks. You know, if you've got to pay rent, you know, live and feed your kids. I mean, even on that sort of lowly amount, it's a challenge, but at least it is something. On the other hand, the quarantine policy, you know me, I'm not never been one to have a short word of criticism for the Berejiklian in government, but I'm sure this will please the conservative listeners and Nick McNamara and the rest of the conservative core out there in the fact that they did get this policy right, whether it was through the user pay police that Gladys loves with the festivals and everything like that she's implemented previously. But they got it right, and seeing the amount of people that come through Sydney, as you said, the international gateway for Australia, and you know, for the rest of the country, you know, probably people from WA, South Australia, even Brisbane, they come through Sydney. So to get that, you know, 5,000 to 6,000 people a week coming through, whatever the amount was, and to ensure there was no breaches as there was down in Melbourne, I think is a feat in itself, and it's obviously a key part of why we've been able to contain the virus. So hats off to the policymakers there.
I think that's also a big one, because that is something that could have gone horribly wrong very, very easily. It would have only taken one or two minor errors for that whole thing to blow up and for New South Wales to be absolutely shut down. So that is underrated. I mean, you know, nothing much competes with people getting money put in their pocket, but that inherently helped slow the virus in New South Wales and ultimately Australia, as it is the international gateway.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is huge.
And you see what the alternative is. There's only a very small pocket of the world that's actually contained the virus, like Australia, effectively eliminating it. New Zealand, Taiwan, Singapore, and a few others in that Southeast Asian region, South Korea. Then you look at the other end of the spectrum, where there's been a complete disregard for scientific evidence, reasonable policy, and a lack of strong compliance amongst the population. You've got the US, you know, they've just ticked past 300,000 deaths. And so the premium on life they place over there is obviously nowhere near as much as significant as we place here. So I think that's sort of going to show the, sort of the fabric of society that we live in Australia, regardless of differences that have been in the past. We can unite, and I feel like we could learn lessons from that generally, in terms of when we come to work together, the outcomes are obviously much more stronger than being divisive.
Yeah.
So that's a lesson for that. So yeah, there are two best contenders for best policy. We've both gone with the job seeker payment just slightly over the hotel quarantine, perhaps, so education and economics background, but they're both very closely aligned, and yeah, we think they're two suitable candidates for the golden gong for the political football policy of the year. But moving on now, obviously you look at the bright side, you've got to look at the downside as well. There's been no shortage of contenders for horrible policies in 2020, and a lot of them come back to the issue of public sector ethics and corruption. I recently completed the uni this as part of my master's degree. And I really enjoyed delving beneath the surface, and sometimes it's the best way to tackle corruption and ethics going forward. And the sort of the issue that I have is the standard you walk by is a standard you accept. You see in other parts of the world where these behaviours are expected by politicians. So you get to this dangerous slippery slope where, you know, oh, it's just part and parcel of politics. And then you come to the dangerous cycle where the best people aren't going into politics, which you need the best people going into politics to make the best decisions, because, you know, we need our brightest minds in there tackling our largest challenges. And It creates an endless cycle. So some of these things I feel like need to be addressed. Obviously, the sports rot scandal, effectively pork barreling marginal seats at the federal election in 2019. That was a big one. The Victorian hotel quarantine mishap with the security firms. Obviously, the security industry is very independent contractors, so they bid off against each other. It's a dog-eat-dog mentality. And when you have that, issues get taken place, especially when the process gets implemented so quickly as it did during the coronavirus pandemic. You got the IKMS. But for me, and I'll get to you shortly, Joe, because I want to give you some time to think about these.
Keep rolling, brother. Keep rolling.
Was the fallout of the robo-debt scandal. Now, the more I think about this, the angrier I get. And the more frustrated, and I can't believe this would happen in the country, in Australia. Episode 2 was about this, one of our original episodes of 2020. For just a quick reminder, was effectively these incorrect notices were sent out by the Department of Human Services, Services Australia, to over 400,000 vulnerable Australians, so people who have received some sort of Centrelink payment in the past or have this perceived debt, and they use a flawed system called income averaging. So for those who work in casual work or part-time work or contract work, they would average it off like their one paycheck. So if you that one paycheck came around Christmas, you had a lot of extra hours, but for the rest of the year, you only had a few hours, or there was periods of, that was seasonal work that you didn't work, they take it off that. So they'd over-report the amount of debt that you would have, and then they generated, this is the computer generated, a sent out notice saying you owe $3,000, $4,000, some up above $10,000 to the Department of Human Services. So we had a lot of people coming forward angry about this because they were obviously unemployed for a period of time, then back into employment, and the human toll of this. I mean, imagine getting a notice and getting harangued by debt collectors, about, you've got this debt to the government. We know financial pressure is a big strain on mental health. And again, I'm not saying Scott Morrison said that, with a gun next to these people's heads, but 2,000 people with these notices that we know of committed suicide in the period of 2015 to 2019. And there's been studies that show that 6 in 10 suicides, one of the main factors, driving factors, is financial stress. So there's no doubt it played a role here. I mean, there's been some harrowing stories. And the lack of remorse, the lack of accountability. This was an illegal practice. If to put this into sort of layman's terms, if me or Joe created a scheme like this, it's effectively a Ponzi scheme, we'd be facing a very long jail term. But not one person has resigned. Not one person has been held accountable. And the reason that is because it goes to the head of the snake, Scott Morrison. He was Social Services Minister when this was introduced, right? And I'm not saying he came up with the idea. Maybe some bright spark in the Department of Human Services came to him. But the whole point is he was a minister. He's the one who drove it. When he was treasurer, he upscaled the program. And then when all this came out, he was prime minister. So that's why no one's being held accountable, because if it was, it'd be Scott Morrison's head on the chopping block, along with current Social Services Minister Stuart Robert and Alan Tudge, who served there for an interim period. So it's an issue that I'm very passionate about, as you can tell. And I just think, how could this possibly be accepted from our political leaders? So that takes the cake for me. But Joe, I'd love to get your thoughts after my little preamble there.
Mate, I was going to agree on the same one, definitely robo-debt. But you basically blew us out of the water there, mate. Yeah, I know a couple of people close to me who were actually part of debt notices and receiving them and stuff, and it wasn't pretty. It was stressful for them, I guess, and stressful for their families. Totally unacceptable. I mean, I think measures have been taken to kind of amend some things, like people have been given their money back in a lot of situations, which is good, but at the same time, receiving those debts, you could have been at a vulnerable point. You can't just cough up thousands of dollars. So I guess nothing can repay the stress that you went through. So money's a big thing, and getting money could relieve some stresses in your life. But yeah, nothing can fix the stresses that you would have went through to fork out that money while being threatened with debt notices. So that's huge for me. The other one's obviously huge, but again, for the best policies, it came down to people receiving money, and for the worst, it was people having money taken away from them. So I guess it's a shame that the two policies, best and worst for this year, were centered around money, which is a shame because there's a lot of other great things that we could be focusing on. But that's just the way it is, especially in the time of pandemic and what's been happening right now with the economy. It's a massive issue. So hopefully money's not the main focus next year and we can move on to bigger things.
That's right. And we've seen the power of what policy can achieve and when we actually get down to the issue and we stop sort of dilly-dallying around the politics. You know, that's one of the things, one of the intents and purposes of this podcast is to build a bridge between politics and policy making. We see politics evolve this endless cycle of just being survivalist from election cycle to election cycle, whereas lasting policy that actually makes a meaningful change, it needs to go beyond that 3-year cycle. It needs to be implemented over a long period of time. It needs to get our best minds at the table thinking about the best solutions for this, because ultimately we've seen the power of policy going past. You know, we've seen the best things government implemented, you know, are really, you know, life-changing things like Medicare and obviously free public, you know, schooling and, you know, even the HECS, you know, there was obviously free university there for a period of time, but, you know, anyone can effectively go to university based on their merits through the HECS scheme and a variety of other things, you know, the unemployment benefit. And I still think, you know, in Australia, I don't want to end too much on a sour note, you know, we're still in a relatively strong position compared to the rest of the world, but we can't be complacent because complacency is our worst nightmare. We've seen it over the last 20 years. When complacency takes place, then things can go wrong. And that's what happened in the robo-debt scheme. But when we're actually proactive and get on the front foot, things like the coronavirus supplement, the hotel quarantine policies, and a variety of other policies that have been implemented in 2020, they can have a really positive effect on us going forward and improve our living standards. So that shows the power of policy, and that's why I'm so passionate about it. And I'm sure that's come across in 2020. And I know, doubt you've got your passions as well. And we look forward to carrying that forward in 2021. So that's a good place to leave the policy space there. We're going to get on to the summer of cricket very shortly with our sporting edition for this Christmas special. And then we're going to go on to our favorite and top sporting moments for 2020. So stay tuned and we'll get that to you shortly. Is your Big Bash fantasy team a bit short of experience in death bowling at the end of the game? Well, guess what? I've got the Big Bash player just for you. His name is Ben Lachlan from the Brisbane Heat. He bowls full tosses and half trackers right in the hitting zone on middle and off for right-handers. He's a perfect fit for your fantasy team and he needs to be in there. So go ahead and join the KFC Big Bash Fantasy League today.
He's hammered that on the offside, lobbed it into the crowd, and they've won the game.
All right, welcome back everybody to Political Football, our final wrap-up episode of the year. Now, we're entering into the sporting section for today, which I've been pretty pumped for after a bit of a break off the air. We're going to talk a little bit about cricket. The white ball series has gone by pretty fast. It went very quickly, way too quickly, but Big Bash is on now, so we've got sport every day, which is amazing. But we'll run through a bit of the Australian cricket, test cricket coming up. We'll run through the team and the squad and we'll give you our thoughts on that. We're also going to go through our top three sporting moments of the year. So I'll give mine and Pools will give his own as well. And then we're going to hit up some fan questions. We know we've been reaching out to you guys in the past few days, so we'll hook into them and then we'll just wrap up the year. It'd be sad to put a cap on the year, but good things ahead, mate.
Yeah, great things ahead. And what a year it has been for the launch of Political Football. And again, we'll say thanks at the end, but just a quick shout out to the regular listeners of the podcast. No doubt you're far and wide across Australia, Southeast Asia and the Pacific. So good to see you still tuning in. And yeah, we're keen to bring it home with the best shebang of the year. That is the cricket summer. We're here. Test starts tomorrow. We're up and about. We're going to give you our team list for the Australian Baggy Greens, the Australian cricket team. Some say the sporting pulse of the nation that is Australia. So we're going to go with it. I'll give you mine first, and then we'll go into Big Boy's O's over here. Now, just a bit of a background. A couple of weeks ago, we were sailing along, going well against India. in a one-day series. They were Warner hitting runs, the whole top order hitting runs. You know, Steve Smith back to his sporting best. The emergence of Cam Green, Nessa, with his all-round abilities and the obviously the bottom line picking itself. But there has been some few spinners thrown into the works with Will Pekowski, the young gun, 22-year-old, getting concussed in the warm-up game at Des Moines Oval, just down the road here from Cinque Docca, an absolute jewel in the sporting crown that is the Australian summer. You've got Leichhardt Oval, the eighth wonder. You've got Des Moines Oval, the ninth wonder of the world. It's just beautiful down there around the corner from Hen and Chicken Bay. You've got to respect it. And I did go down there to catch a little glimpse through the fence. Bit disappointed they didn't let anyone in, obviously because of the COVID restrictions. Anyone in, I suppose, you can get pretty intimate there at Des Moines Oval, and that's part of the beauty of it. But yeah, watching through the fence there was good. And I actually saw Ken Green when he just before he hit his 100 there for about an hour or so, and he looked in immense class. The future is green, and that's why I'm picking him in my team. He's a star bolter into this team. Number six, you know, two meters tall. He can come with a few tailwinds behind him, bowl four, six overs. I think he's limited to four overs given his previous history with stress fractures. But he hits the ball as crisp as anyone. The sound it was making off that beautiful GM premium English willow was sensational. And that's why he's coming in at number six on my list. But going back to the top of the order, there's been a lot of contention around this. Obviously, Joe Burns couldn't hit a run if you hit him in the face. A bit like myself from a short and unfortunate return to the cricket arena. But I'm going with a bit of stability. I just think we need a bit of stability at the top. Back him in for at least a couple of tests. I feel like in the past, we've been easy to throw people to the wind when they don't hit runs straight away. But I'm backing him in. He's hit four test centuries. He's got an average close to 40. We need that stability at the top. And then the other opening partner I've gone with, I haven't gone with Marcus Harris, so I think he's had his chances. I've gone with Matt Wade at the top of the order. So I'm moving him up from six, where Cameron Green slots in, to the top of the order. I like that left-hand, right-hand combination. He has been in good form, seen the T20s form. You know, scoring runs in any form is good. And I think his experience, that has been around for a long time, is exactly what we need. I've gone for Labuschagne at number three. Lasagna is what they call him, or Labuschagne as in the Australian parlance. Obviously selects himself. C. Smith, world's best player. That people talk about Virat Kohli. He's a pretender, mate. He's no Steve Smith.
Please.
Travis Head. Yeah, I love a bit of head on my beer, and I love a bit of a head in my cricket team. He's coming in number five. I think he's hit a couple of tons in the Sheffield Shield first couple of rounds, so he's in good form. Then obviously Tim Payne at seven. Captain, The Rock. Love his leadership style. Would be nice to see him score a couple of 50s. I mean, obviously he's in there for his leadership and his wicket-keeping ability. And then the bowling lineup picks itself. The New South Wales all-star attack. Mitchell Starc, Patrick Cummins, Nathan Lyon, Josh Hazlewood, and they've got Michael Nessa at 12th man. So I think it's a very strong lineup, and I know people have been backing India over the last couple of weeks, seeing probably a couple of weeks ago you wouldn't find anyone to drop money on India, but given the sort of adversity that the Australian team's got over the last couple of weeks with all this chopping and changing with amongst the squad, they're probably back into the equation a bit, but I'm still backing the Aussies in to win this series and win it big. And this, I still think, even with Kohli in the team for this first test, I still see us getting the bickies.
Mate, nailed it. I like the team you've put up there. I'm just amazed. Like, a few weeks ago, it's looking like we're going to have a dominant summer. Our team's looking beautiful. Our team's looking healthy. And then all of a sudden, bang, 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 sniper in the building. You see Warner go down with a random groin injury. Couple blokes hit in the head. Pekowski, everyone excited to watch him make his debut, which is almost basically inevitable. It was basically going to happen the whole year. So very disappointing. And then all of a sudden, yeah, like as you said, we're left with what is looking to be like Burns and Wade potentially opening, which isn't such a bad thing, but I mean, Wade has never opened in an Australian test team. So, I mean, it's no easy. He does step up to the plate. He does play well under the spotlight and when it matters, but that's a huge ask. That's a huge ask against India, especially in that first test where Virat's still here. He'll be there for that first test. But yeah, I think if Australia can have their backs up against the wall in that test with the squad they got and come out with a win, I think that would be quite impressive. Especially because Justin Langer's called the preparation for the first test disjointed. So that's not good to hear, especially Smith missed batting practice yesterday with a sore back. So that's not something we want to hear. All of a sudden, it's looking a little bit nerve-wracking coming in. But we'll see tomorrow the team they put out there. Yeah, I mean, Burns probably going to be there, and I'd probably like to see him there, but I wouldn't be surprised if him and Marcus Harris are interchangeable with each other. But I do think we will see Wade, Labuschagne, Smith in that order. Yeah, most likely head. And I really hope Cameron Green gets a call up. I think he deserves it, especially if he's healthy after that massive head knock he took. Geez. That was pretty brutal. That was pretty brutal, yeah. Mate. I don't know how that wasn't worse.
In the face.
But mate, I'm pumped. Absolutely pumped for this test summer. Head down to the coast, you know, crack a few frothy la-las.
Couple of squee-la-las.
Go for a swim in the innings break, mate. It's going to be good. Tell
and,
you that.
And what your thoughts on the, obviously it's a day-night test, which adds another element of intrigue to the matchup. I'm not sure how many day-night matches India have played in, but I believe last time they came around, they refused to play a day-night test. I think Australia's played 7 day-night tests. We haven't lost one. We haven't lost a day-night test, so that's got that's a good record on the board there. And the sense that they're swinging ball around, I feel like whoever wins the toss in this is a big, gets on the front for big talks. You don't want to be batting last on it.
We haven't lost, but if we're going to lose one, it's this one.
Yeah.
Like, this lineup is still got some unreal players in it, and our bowling lineup is still as good as it's ever been. But I mean, you have to put runs on the board. And I mean, if India are going to play their first day night test or whatever, and if they refuse to last time they were here, whatever, but if this is the one, they can win, if anything else. So yeah, I mean, it would be lovely to see our boys. I know they were talking about Pekowski and Warner potentially being back for Boxing Day, which would be huge. I mean, I know a few other batters over the past, don't ask me the names now because I can't recall them, have made their test debut on Boxing Day, and it's such a massive...
momentous occasion.
Yeah, massive call-up. So I'm hoping that's the case. So yeah, I'm a bit nervous for how this first test is going to go, but I'd love to see them put their backs against the wall and pull out a gutsy win.
And in the context of the series, I think it's more important that India get this win. Seeing that Virat Kohli, this is the only test he'll be out here, obviously returning for the birth of his new child back to India. So in the context of the series, I think it's more important that India have to win this game if they've got any chance of winning the series, especially going to Brisbane, going to Melbourne, probably, you know, a relatively even matchup. But you got Brisbane and Sydney, you know, back Australia in those two locations. So I think this is absolutely crucial. I'm just not sure the top six for India outside of probably Rahane, Pujara, and Kohli, they're probably the three with key wickets. But outside of that, I see those Indian batsmen struggling.
Yeah, I'm interested to see who wants to step up for India when Virat leaves. I mean, I don't know if that means who's going to score the runs that Virat usually couldn't score, or if it just means who's going to step up as a leader and be that kind of culture captain in their team, because you know the shit he can stir on the field, and he can get he can rattle the Aussies a lot. You've seen him and Tim Payne battle it out a few times, so I wonder who or if anyone is going to step up and take that role, or if that's just his key characteristic that no one can replace, which makes him such a valuable player to India's team if he's irreplaceable in that regard. So that's interesting
for sure, and it's all before us. So hopefully that's a comprehensive review or preview of this week's test match in Adelaide. We're looking forward to getting started. I know all of our listeners from Adelaide to Brisbane will be keen on tuning into that. So I hope that goes down well with you. And again, sending your thoughts, and we'll get back to you in 2021 at some point. But now moving on to perhaps you know, we do take a very macro view here at political football. We've gone with it before. I think we've gone through our top three Aussie sporting moments, but now we're going through our top three sporting moments of 2020. Joe, do you want to do the honours or want me to take this one away?
I'm happy to, mate.
Yeah, by all means, take us away.
I know you've got some rippers.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, we'll head in with the steady pace and then we'll let you boom us, blow us out of the water again, mate.
Unleash the beast.
So, I guess it's been an absolutely crazy year for sport in many regards. And I guess we're just lucky to have even had a year of especially footy and... I mean, now you see the American sports starting to come through and then we've got our summer of cricket happening too. So we're very lucky. And after that 1 or 2 month period without sport, it was, you know, you didn't know if we were going to see any for the rest of the year.
It's a shit period, that's for sure.
Which certainly brings us into my first of my top three moments of the year, the NRL restart. One of the first major pro sports competitions to return, which just was huge, massive for me, boosted my mood every week, absolutely, like, can't be said enough how great this moment was for me. Just seeing after all of the issues with COVID, so much stress, everything turned serious and everything turned grey, and heading into a winter without sport is just like, what can you do? You can't go outside your house. You can't go to the shops. You can't go see your mates at the pub. Can't have a beer. What's there to do? And then especially without footy on top of that is massive. And when footy kicked back off, even if you have to stay in your house, at least you could watch a game. You know, you sit back on the weekend and enjoy the game. So hats off to the NRL. They did a great job there. And then kind of extending on to that is... One of my second top three sporting moments was round 8, Roosters versus Melbourne. Massive game, two top of the table heavyweights hitting it out, and the ending of that game was just ridiculous. Like, I've never seen such an up and down lead changing game in my life. Penalty goal, win. Sick. Sick. Yeah. So lads. that takes a cake for my game of the year for NRL and makes it into my top three sporting moments. And then lastly, and most recently, Steve Smith's 62 ball hundreds back to back in the ODIs, mate. What a way to start the summer off, and there's nothing I like more than seeing an Aussie just smack 100. Big 100.
You love to see it.
And start the summer off in such a great way. I mean, there's so many other great sporting moments this year that can't but will go unsaid, which is unfortunate, but for me that was huge. A great start to the summer for Steve Smith. He just edged out Kansas City winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
for me, I think.
So. That's a great top three. And you've gone to the bread and butter issues of the Australian living room, the cricket and rugby league arenas, or as Chairman Pete would say, rugby league. It's coming back on March 28th. That's what he used to say. That's what he said. And they were all calling him ridiculous. You know, how can you turn around in 7 weeks? Well, you did it because some people say they can, and then some people say they can't. And they're both usually right. bit of a morale boosting for you, but I also had the May 28 restart in there, but seeing that you've so comprehensively covered that, I won't go through that again. I did have that in there, but I'll take that out there for the moment. I'll go and I'll just quickly rearrange it. But we've just got a special guest joining the line. Stephen A. Smith is in here joining us from New York. Coronavirus free, I believe. But he wants to give his top three moments. By all means, Stephen, I know you're a long time listener of the podcast. By all means, give us your top three moments. And remember, this is an Australian podcast.
Yeah, no worries, Pauls. I've got you covered. And same with Joe down there, I've got to respect you. And let's go to work. So number three on the list. Now, those of you who know me, I'm a big cycling fan. And nothing gets me going like the Tour de France, baby. We're up there sipping the champagne up there in the regions of Bordeaux and Champagne. And I gotta love it. And what I gotta love is coming at number three, it's Richie Porte at the Tour de France getting a podium finish. He's only the second Australian to ever do so. It's an illustrious elite company that he joins in Cadell Evans, and he was one of only two Australians to participate in the 2020 edition given the limitations of coronavirus. And his scintillating performance on the penultimate time trial event was nothing sort of short of sensational, and I gotta respect that, and that's why he's coming in at number three on the list. But let's go to number two on the list. Enough for the jibber jabber, enough of that. And it was a historic year for the Australian women's T20 team. Now, just on the precipice of the coronavirus locking everything down, they go out and win in front of an 86,000 strong crowd at the MCG, the T20 World Cup. Now, there's one thing to go out there and win a World Cup, but to have the pressure in your own backyard and go out there and deliver the likes of Meg Lenning, the likes of Elise Perry, the likes of, you know, the whole team getting around everybody out there. And Alyssa Healy, no doubt, was a star in that game, getting a job over a powerhouse Indian team. And that's why they're coming in at number two on the list. But let's go to number one on the list. Now, give it to me, baby. It's LeBron James living out Kobe Bryant's legacy. You know, obviously, it was tragic. Kobe Bryant's death felt like it's mad all across the world, let alone the United States of America. But LeBron James coming over to the LA Lakers, being the great family man that he is, the great man of faith and charity that he is. He is a leader of no other kind, but we all know he's one of the best basketball players to ever have played the game. And for him to deliver an NBA championship to the storied history of the Los Angeles Lakers, the likes of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the likes of Magic Johnson, and of course the likes of Kobe Bryant, for him to live out that legacy and to join the Mount Rushmore of Los Angeles basketball was nothing short of special and had a special place in my heart, and that's why it's coming in at number one on the list. Kudos.
Wow, Stephen A, mate. Did you take a breath in there, mate?
Thanks, Stephen A, for joining us there. Left a bit speechless there after that. I mean, how can you beat that top three? The passion, the emotion that came through there was extraordinary. And no doubt, I think he's bang on the money. And funnily enough, that's the top three that I had as well.
Oh, jeez.
If you can believe it. So, thank you, Stephen A. And that was rather unsuspecting, but I'm no doubt that I'm sure that'll boost our ratings going into the Christmas break. So yeah, that's where we'll leave the top three sporting moments. But of course, we've saved some fan questions. We haven't, the last couple of editions, we didn't do fan questions. So we're going to come through. We've got a plethora. We've got hundreds coming through. Wrapping up after the Origin Series, the unsuspecting Queensland win. Then into the cricket summer, Steve Smith turning up, as Boyzo said, in his top three. Cam Green, the future is green, they were saying. And it still is. Right, but we've got some questions coming in here. This first one is from Tommy Lee. This is to Joe Boyden.
Right.
Because now that you've seen Andy Lee play both touch and basketball, which sport is he worst at?
Mate, stitch up. How do I answer a question without giving an answer? Yeah, Andy, mate, unreal performance in both sports. Too hard to split, honestly, down the middle. I see a lot of similarities in his game between basketball and touch, and he's speedy fella with good eyes and good head for the game. And yeah, he's a great player in both sports. Next question.
There you go.
I'm not answering that. No, what am I trying to do here, mate? Teammates in two sports.
Yeah.
If I answer the question, what happens to me?
Look, I didn't send in the question. Tommy Lee did, so...
Tommy, just DM me, mate.
Yeah. Okay, there you go. Tommy Lee, good question there, putting boys on the spot, and I've got to respect that. This one is from Matt Skinner to myself. Your thoughts on Shaun Bloor in 2021? Is he the rising star and the future of the game? Absolutely, he is. This man is special. He's like 6'4", with a handle, defensive presence of a monster. No doubt he'll have a big 2021, and I'll let Sean do all the speaking from here on in, because no doubt he can put his money where his mouth is. This one from Braden Ferdinand's. I haven't heard from him in a while since he's been whipped, but it's good to see. Good to hear him chime in. Malcolm Turnbull, the best PM to have ever lived. Oh, that's funny. His own party didn't even get around him, so not sure how you come up with that one. But keep plugging away, mate, and you'll get there one day. This one from Joel Schiffler to myself. Is Matt Skinner to Canberra what Andrew Johns is to Newcastle? Or is in his early days down there in Canberra, obviously Boyzo being a Canberra boy, I think you have some things to say about that. But definitely only was down there for just on 2 years, and he's gone from being a graduate to
being a senior policy officer. He's making waves down there in the Department of Home Affairs with Mike Pezzullo, and no doubt there's better things where he came from. So it's good to see some quality people in Home Affairs, because the person who heads it up in Peter Dutton, he's certainly lacking a bit between the ears. So on your way down there, Matt Skinner, and well done to you. So there are questions for this round. Again, if you've got any more questions, that we, you know, these are the ones we've handpicked as the best ones going forward. But yeah, this is a lot to wrap up. Boys, would you like to say some remarks on 2020? Just a summation of what, you know, of what 2020 means to you.
Well, mate, I first of all, start off by saying thank you to yourself for having me on. I had a great time. Each week we came down here into the beautiful Cinque Docker. Mate, speaks for itself, this place. Thanks for having me on, guys, and thanks for listening. 2020, mate, I'm exhausted, honestly.
Yep.
Just get me down the coast.
Yeah, recharge your batteries.
Get a new in me hand, you know, get me in front of the cricket, get me to the beach, just get me out of 2020, honestly. I mean, we made it through, everything's great, but I'm sure I share the thoughts of a lot of people in Australia right now, and in the world, actually, but get me out.
Yep. As Kelly Clarkson would say, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And that's certainly been the story of 2020 for a lot of people. I know a lot of people out there are struggling, so just know there's always there for someone you talk to. Resilience is key in most things. It's not about how hard you get hit, it's about how hard you can get hit and keep on getting moving up and getting going forward. So that's a big thing. I'd love to give a big thanks to my man Boys over here for coming along and co-hosting the podcast for the second half of the year. No doubt it was a very enjoyable experience, and I loved having him on. I'm sure he enriched the viewing presence and a listening presence of our listeners. Also thanks to everyone who's joined the podcast throughout the year. My co-host for the first part of the year, Harry Tate, before he sold himself out for an insurance job. And then Jesse Keogh came along and co-hosted an episode. Big shout out to my man Jesse. Tom Mancinski joining early this year for a bit of rugby analysis. And all the questions coming through, especially from our staple listeners like Nick McNamara, Joel Schiffler, Matt Skinner, and the likes, and you know, all the two or three girls that listen to it, full respect to you. So I don't know how you do it, but full respect to you. But thanks so much for joining us this year. We'll be back in 2021 after a break over the summer, and then we'll be back stronger than ever, ready to deliver some more policy over politics, some more substance over style, so that you can be informed and you can go forth into this world with a bit more enlightenment in your ears. So go forth and may have a Merry Christmas and enjoy yourself over the New Year break. Take care of yourselves.